Crítica, solicitó respeto por el derecho a huelga, criticó la falta de diálogo del gobierno, la impunidad y, en general, levantó la voz a favor de las minorías. Fue una manifestación con un tono distinto, una comunidad de ideas, expresó Ana Doris González, vicecoordinadora de la Asociación de Profesores de Segunda Enseñanza en la zona norte del país.
Un llamado de atención por la situación que se vive en el país, por el problema económico, la situación de la pobreza, el desempleo. Es una advertencia. Definitivamente el pueblo no puede aceptar ni permitir que el derecho a huelga se elimine.
El paro nacional reunió a educadores, sector salud, universitarios, ambientalistas y campesinos, quienes se concentraron en más de 20 puntos del territorio nacional. Desde Radio Santa Clara, Sonia Jiménez.
El presidente Vladimir Putin dejó claro este martes que Rusia no va a entregar a Estados Unidos a Edward Snowden, excontratista de la Agencia Nacional de Seguridad, quien huyó de Hong Kong, el cual, dijo, se encuentra todavía en el aeropuerto de Moscú. Putin alegó razones legales para no extraditarlo, pese a su insistente petición. Solo podemos entregar a ciudadanos de ciertos países con los que tenemos el respectivo acuerdo, y con Estados Unidos no tenemos esa clase de tratado, afirmó el mandatario ruso. Por su parte, el canciller Sergei Lavrov declaró que son absolutamente infundados e inaceptables los intentos de acusar a Rusia de violar las leyes de Estados Unidos y de participar poco menos que en una conspiración. Añadió que, por si fuera poco, las declaraciones van unidas a amenazas en contra de su país. Mientras tanto, el presidente de Venezuela, Nicolás Maduro, ha expresado su disposición de considerar una petición de asilo al ex empleado de la Agencia de Seguridad Nacional, Edward Snowden. Escribiendo sobre el polémico tema de Snowden y sus revelaciones, el periodista David Lindorf cuestiona la descripción que hace Estados Unidos de Rusia como amigo y aliado. ¿Por qué la Agencia de Seguridad Nacional ha estado secretamente espiando los teléfonos celulares de líderes rusos? ¿Es eso el comportamiento de un amigo o aliado?, pregunta Lindorf. El reconocido periodista señala que es impresionante ver a John Kerry dar clases a Latinoamérica sobre el respeto a las leyes y amenazarlos con las consecuencias si ofrecen asilo a Edward Snowden. Los Estados Unidos, dice Lindorf, casi desde su fundación han tratado a América Latina como su propiedad, lanzando invasiones para asesinar a líderes opositores, impulsando dictadores fascistas por siglos, orquestando golpes de Estado para derrocar gobiernos elegidos legítimamente y hasta entrenando generaciones de líderes fascistas futuros en la Escuela de las Américas. Lindorf añade que la administración Obama misma estuvo detrás del golpe de Estado en Honduras e interfirió activamente en la última elección presidencial en Venezuela, en un intento fallido de prevenir la toma del poder del populista sucesor de Hugo Chávez. Los ecuatorianos de seguro recuerdan cómo en los años 60 la CIA infiltró al gobierno del Ecuador, creando agencias de noticias y emisoras de radio, bombardeando periódicos derechistas e iglesias, culpando a la izquierda, y todo con el fin de sacar del gobierno al presidente Velasco Ibarra. Y cuando Carlos Arosemada, quien reemplazara a Ibarra, rehusó cortar relaciones con Fidel Castro en Cuba, la CIA orquestó y financió un golpe de Estado. Y después de que este ocurriera, el gobierno militar declaró ilegal el comunismo y canceló las elecciones de 1964. Las décadas de intervención norteamericana en Ecuador también incluyeron el intento de golpe de Estado apoyado por Washington en 2010, donde un grupo de la Policía Nacional intentó negar un segundo término de gobierno a Rafael Correa, el actual presidente. Y con todo eso, Kerry tiene el valor de dar lecciones de respeto a las leyes a Ecuador y a otras naciones latinoamericanas, pidiéndoles que no den asilo a Snowden, acota Lindorf. ¿Acaso no te estás riendo todavía?, pregunta el escritor. Los latinoamericanos no lo encuentran gracioso. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez.
You're listening to Freak Radio 101.1 FM, and we're Big Light, and we love Santa Cruz. Thanks for listening.
Y gracias para todos. And now it's time
for... This is Freedom. He couldn't make it tonight, but I'd like to ask him his prediction.
Yes, coming up next, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides. That's... For 2 hours, we're going to be chattering at you, and you hopefully will chat back. This is a show concerned with civil rights for poor people in Santa Cruz and around the area, and actually around other areas as well. May have a special guest or two, not sure what the the heat is going to bring, and it's a hot one today. Today, of course, is June 27th, 2013. This is the anniversary of Emma Goldman's mother's birthing day. She was born on this day. Emma Goldman, a famous speaker, writer, activist, freedom fighter, anarchist. And also the IWW was formed on this day about 30 years after Emma's birth in 1905. For those of you who are historians interested in the birth of radical unions, the Wobblies, the industrial workers of the world. Hey, a little bit of history for you. Now let's do some musical pausing while I set up a little further, and we'll get into interviews and perhaps your phone calls. If you want to call in, the number here is 427-3772. 427-3772 is the phone number. If you're out of the area, try 831 first, and then 427-3772. Let's go.
All I am is just a housewife, nothing special, nothing great. What I do is kind of boring. If you'd rather, it can wait. All I am is someone's mother. All I am is someone's wife. All of which seems unimportant. All it is just my love. Shop for groceries, look for specials. God, it sounds so Mickey Mouse. Drop the kids off, pick the shirts off. Try to lose weight, try again. Keep the troops fed, pick their things up. Lose your patience, count to 10. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
All I am is just a housewife, just a housewife.
What I do is
out of fashion.
What I feel is
out of date.
All I am is someone's mother.
Right away, I'm not too bright.
What I do is
unfulfilling.
So the TV talk shows tell me every night.
Just a housewife from Working, Studs Terkel's early 80s musical. And again, the second welcome to Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and we have lots of street interviews. I've been, Yeah, out on the streets. Sometimes it's productive, other times it's not. Getting some assistance from other cop watchers, trying to keep an eye on how police are and security thugs are treating people as the hammer comes down on poor and homeless people. Might be looking in on some of the Palo Alto testimony and furthering of anti-homeless laws that happened in one of their legislative committees on Tuesday. Palo Alto is a city that has a habitation, well, the it's legal for people to sleep in their vehicles and live in their vehicles in Palo Alto. And for a number of years, NIMBYs in the neighborhoods, police officers and others have been trying to criminalize this practice. Just to be sure that the occasional criminal doesn't slip through the net, you know. It's okay to punish 20 innocent people so that one guilty person can be apprehended. That's the theory, I guess, behind this. And similarly, in Santa Cruz, there's a similar theory around the pseudo-public safety hysteria that's been generated by the Clean Team, Take Back Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz City Council, Santa Cruz Neighbors, Downtown Association, Santa Cruz Police Department, and other agencies, some of whom should know better, but are going along with this probably for various reasons. Some of them are their own reasons. Police Department gets better funding, more prestige, more power if they can magnify the danger of the homeless person camping in the bushes, yeah, that sort of thing. And, of course, it's false. It's dangerous to the people that it's criminalizing and demonizing and stigmatizing, but it's kind of standard. It's something that's been done for decades, and this time it's being done in a very well-organized fashion with a very charismatic hook. Needles has been the terror weapon used to terrify the population and stir people into hostility towards homeless folks with the theory that they're just defending their children, with no real understanding that people outside have a far harder time of it and are far more threatened with all kinds of things on the day-to-day basis than any kind of dangers faced by middle-class people with comfortable homes. And indeed, you know, bad disposal of needles is bad disposal of needles. It needs to be dealt with for sure. And it's nothing really new. There's been no upsurge in it. Although I admit, I found my first needle a couple months ago out of my period of living here since on and off since 1977. So maybe I just haven't been that observant, or maybe I've forgotten all those needles I found. Or maybe certain people have been focusing on this in order to, well, both with the charitable and I think commendable idea of cleaning up the environment, but also the idea of creating a kind of fearful power that can move an otherwise indifferent city council and staff structure in town into doing something, where doing something in this case means increasing police pressure against homeless people who are suddenly the villains. So, I think most people listening to the show knows this is a bunch of horseshit. And if you don't, or if you disagree, or if you agree, feel free to call in to talk about it, 427-3772. I'm going to begin with some interviews from homeless folks. We're probably going to be getting a call in around 6:30 from Sandra Lee of Community TV, talking about the upcoming telethon there and the dangers Community TV is facing. Regular listeners know that I've talked a lot about how free radio is about to go under, at least as far as an actual transmitted radio show. That may not be happening. There may be some light here coming in, and maybe some positive news. Uncle Dennis, who comes in at 8 to do his show, will have more information about that. I've been catching glimpses on the internet of the Free Radio Santa Cruz chat about email list that perhaps someone has offered or suggested a transmitter site. The old site is about to be removed probably within the next week or two, if not within the next day or two. Again, I'm always a little unclear about when that's going to happen, and perhaps the person who has been allowing us to use that property to put out the kind of information, news, music, and programming that you've heard isn't her or himself sure of what when the actual date is. Anyway, if you want to be helpful with this, do give a... give a look at the Freak Radio website. That's where you can find our schedules. That's where you can find some archives of many of the shows. That's where you can find how to donate. Freakradio.org is the website to go to, and it's also the place where you can actually catch the stream, which is what we may be reduced to shortly. To catch the stream, you just go to freakradio.org, and you click on the red dot at the top of the transmitter icon. And that should put you here with Free Radio. Again, the call-in number, if you have any reports from the street out there or comments on what you're hearing, is 831-427-3772. And now I'm going to move directly into some interviews.
Gosh, 24th of June, we're talking 20 to 6, and we're talking here with
Robert Hutchinson,
a.k.a.
Retired Navy.
Also known as?
Naval Air. I like Santa Cruz a lot, but something's troubled me. One thing that happened 2 days ago, apparently I had either a stroke or a seizure, and somebody called the paramedics, and it was 2:30 in the morning. I was downtown. And Trevor, the paramedic, said he was mad at me because he had to get out of bed and come and get me. And he...
Yeah, what is this stuff? Rousing people from a sleep? What, is this inconsiderate?
It gets better as it goes on. And then he started ragging on me. I said, hey, man, just, hey, don't go, you relax. But he says, well, I'll put you out right here and call the police. I said, all right, please call the police and let me out. He wouldn't do it. So then he takes me to Dominica. I go through triage, and they were good. I go in, they put me in the room, and this young intern convinces, you can't stay here. And with him, he had a big security guy. He says, yeah, and you got to go right now. I'll escort you off the property. And I said, well, I know my... He said, well, I'm going to make sure you leave. So I said, okay, fine.
Now, you were walking or wheelchairing as you are now?
I was in a walker, and I fell down. So anyhow, so they ran me off. And it's cold out, you know, and I was all alone, so I went over to there's a convenience store down the street. I asked the young man, I said, can I wait here till the buses start running? It'd be about another hour. I said, well, sure, have a seat. Do you like a cup of coffee? I said, well, yeah, sure.
So he did you have any money? Did you pay the man for the coffee?
No, I didn't have any money. He didn't have, he said, you need bus fare. I said, well, I'll get a courtesy ride. So anyhow, the buses came. I was waiting, and some guy, you follow me, and the cops came, and they arrested him. And I said, could you give me a ride? Well, we're in the middle of something else. We're not a taxi service today. So I got on the bus, and I came back downtown. But I was very troubled about Dominican's supposed to be a hospital. Here you have a young man, or old man like me, who had a stroke or seizure, and they would not give me medical treatment. They were very rude. The paramedic, Trevor, was extremely rude. So, anyhow, I'm okay, but it troubles my soul that they do that. I mean, they're supposed to heal people. The one guy, the security guy, got mad one day before that. Somebody called, they shipped me, and he says, you're going to have to find another hobby. I said, look, I didn't call him. I said, I told him not. I said, it's not a hobby. You know, I got serious medical problems. He said, well, you have to find another hobby. And he said, I said, you have to go. I said, could you help me to the door? He says, no. And the nurse says, get him a chair, take him to the door. He got mad because he had to push me to the door of the wheelchair and help me out of the wheelchair.
So maybe they think you're faking it, Hutch.
Well, they think I'm faking it, and I'm not. Apparently they must, because I go in there. See,
are you faking it?
No. I take medication for heart. I take medication for epilepsy. I take medication for pain. I take medication to sleep. I don't fake. I've got written documentation from Palo Alto. What happened was I lost. If I don't take my meds, I had a seizure and somebody took all my meds. So if I don't take them every day, then I'll have, it's my heart or it's a stroke. So I got to go tomorrow and get my meds renewed.
Right now you don't have your meds.
No, I don't, but I'm okay.
Or should we be expecting an incident soon? Or?
No, I just pray and I relax. But I don't stress out. But I stay around people just in case. So anyhow...
Well, what are you doing downtown at 2 in the morning? You weren't around people.
I don't know what I was doing, man. I was headed back to where I sleep. Where I sleep, you know. I didn't make it.
Indoors, outdoors?
Outdoors. I have a payee that will pay my rent, but every time I'm in a motel room, they say, you're smoking, you got to go. We'll call the police. So they call the police. Police probably say, oh, you have to go. So... And then my payee gets the money back. So I don't want to pay $100, get kicked out, chewed on, and, well, they stole stuff from me. But anyhow, I don't rent rooms here. What I'm buying a house in Happy Camp. Wednesday I get paid, and I'm going up and close that deal.
How much is the house? The
house is $130,000.
That's pretty cheap for a house.
Well, it's two houses, double-story house, a guest house with a back fenced-in yard, garden, and a garage. Happy Camp's nice.
Where now, is Happy Camp anyway?
It's up 40 miles south of the Oregon border, 100 miles inland from Central City or Crescent City.
And you know people up there, or you're going to be alone?
I lived up there for a year. I know the people. I'm buying a house. I told them I'd buy it a long time ago. He died. Her husband died. She wants to sell it. And I can get a loan for up to $155,000 and the VA will co-sign, but I have $80,000 saved up for a down payment.
So they're not going to have... Hutchinson to kick around anymore down here.
Well, it's nothing personal. They violate people's rights, especially if they think you're homeless or poor, or if they think you got something, they'll shake you down and take it. You know, so they victimize people down here. They treat homeless people like they don't treat them like human beings. Not everybody, but some of them, they don't like it. They think they're a bunch of mooches, and they're not. Maybe some of them are, but they're not. They can't afford rent. If they get a check, it's only for about $900 or $1,000. You say $100 a night for a room. Food you get free, but it's terrible. The police will bust you, take your stuff, and turn you loose. And you never see it again. That's happened to me and other people. However, I have things in storage now, and I'm moving out. I'll be coming back, you know, but to visit, you know, because I like to hear it. Overall, I like it, but there are some individuals that are very cruel to other people. They're very inhumane. But that's the general rule here.
We've been talking with that man in the wheelchair with a cup of coffee in his hand.
And I thank the good people here. I thank you and the people that are advocating for us, because we're making progress. And unless we stand up for our rights or our freedom, we'll lose.
I don't know about the progress, but we've been talking with
Robert Norton, Robert Hutchinson, Leon.
Robert and Robert, thank you very much.
Days are coming. Jesus come back, rapture's coming. But in the meantime, we have to accept what we can't change and have the courage to change and improve the quality of all's life. Turn your cheek, forgive them, and pray for them.
Thank you, Hutchinson.
And I've had many an interview with Robert Hutchinson. He's an older guy. I'm not sure how much older he is. He's in his 60s. He was in a wheelchair on Monday when I spoke to him at the Red Church. And, you know, it's hard to independently verify this stuff, or I haven't, let's put it this way, gone out of my way to make efforts to do that. I'm simply passing on his account of how he has been treated. What I draw from it, from what he says, is that there is an increasingly hostile and unsympathetic and even vicious attitude towards homeless people. The idea that they are... Where vicious is sort of implies a kind of an aggressive, sadistic approach. It's more a degrading of homeless people. treating them as though they were not just second-class citizens, but really not really worthy of any kind of human rights at all. They're just a nuisance, a bother. They're faking, whatever. They aren't really outside struggling. They're getting high and shooting up and leaving their needles all over and drinking and partying while the rest of the society works hard at two or three jobs. This is the fantasies that are being promulgated, have been for a long time, by kind of the Republican Party mentality. And the Democrats, with their social services that actually don't provide any real meaningful social services in a continuous and comprehensive way, or even the most basic social services such as the right to shelter, the right to sleep legally and safely somewhere, not everywhere, but somewhere. This is the ruling class situation is one of profound intolerance toward homeless people with the Democrats, with the so-called progressives. It's attempting to cover it over with an appearance of caring. With the other group, it's using the ideology, well, they can make it if they want, and all they need to do is pull themselves up by their own bootstraps and so forth. You be the judge. Any thoughts on this, feel free to call in, 427-3772. Also, any street reports, what have you seen out there? What we've heard from Hutch is how medical authorities are treating him. And there actually was, and you're going to hear it soon in the tape, kind of peripherally, there was a person who did go into seizures on the sidewalk as I was interviewing someone else. And there were police and fire services and paramedics pretty quickly there, within minutes, very quickly. And I was preoccupied with interviewing other people, so I didn't take the opportunity to see if there was any kind of disrespectful or dismissing attitude. I suspect there would be less likely around a bunch of people who were watching. And we have no indication whether Hutch was probably at 2 in the morning, as he describes it. He wasn't. There were no other witnesses, just as at 1 or 2 in the morning it was at that time period that Officer Vasquez dropped Richard Hardy in handcuffs, face forward and body forward, straight into the concrete, sending him to the hospital with no witnesses other than Brent and his video camera. I suppose that's a pretty impressive witness, so you would wonder... either Vasquez was supremely indifferent, he was negligent, or he made a mistake, or he was so hostile it didn't make any difference. And, of course, we haven't heard anything more about that case. We don't know its disposition or its outcome. It has disappeared from sight. Although the Sentinel is full of crime and murder trial headlines and pollution in the ocean and our pollution on the beach, Cowell Beach, and again, all with the agenda of ramping up pressure against the demonized group of homeless people. Buffing up the police force. Discrediting those who want to make the laws saner, end the drug war. It's kind of part of an ancient ideology that I had thought we had outgrown, but we ain't. It's still there. Let's hear some more interviews from Monday, the few days ago.
So we have a report not just about the police, but about, people in Santa Cruz generally?
Yeah, well, you got this good guys or whatever they call themselves, and then you got Take Back Santa Cruz, and they're doing a lot of harassment to these tourists, and, you know, people are starting to get ready to put on the internet about how unfriendly Santa Cruz has become. And this is from people from Nevada, Carolina, Colorado, people all over that I've talked to that are in the same boat that I am from Washington, that Santa Cruz people have become just blatantly uncaring, heartless people.
Smartly compassionate. We don't want your kind around here, pretty much. It's not a matter of being unfriendly. It's a matter of show us your money, buddy.
Well, that's uncaring. to the
We care about the finer things, the greenbacks. Yeah, come on.
Well, Santa Cruz has become about mainly, as you said, the greenback of California, and they can't pull their own weight because they're chasing off their own tourists.
And we've been talking to that malcontent PP, the pendulum pusher, perhaps?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a person running around blabbing about what the other tourists are telling me as a tourist about what to watch out for. And these aren't the locals. These are actually tourists with their own motorhomes, $100,000 motorhomes and stuff being yelled at by locals.
I got you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, running around tourist guy.
Yeah. Have a beautiful day.
All right.
And I call him the pendulum pusher because he reported, I guess, several weeks, if not months ago, that the police are again issuing tickets to people who are pushing the pendulum that is kind of an artwork downtown that is designed to be pushed, according to the artist who made it, in front of Rosie McCann's. If you're downtown, you know the area. He calls himself PP, a pendulum pusher. And so do I.
Sheriff's Department report from Doc Holliday. Go ahead, Doc.
I've been chased out of my camp spot that I lived at for 4 years. I had permission from the owner of the property to stay there. I'm an ex-con. They're chasing out all the parolees. They are not allowing nobody around the property that's on parole or anything like that.
Can we say what property this is?
It's Dan Kraft's Autobody. It's on Soquel and Highway 1, right on the frontage road.
How many people does this impact?
It's impacted quite a few people so far. Let me think here. It's been about 5 people, 6 people so far that have been chased away from this area because they're on parole or they're just not compatible for the area, what the sheriffs want from the people.
And who told you this?
Santa Cruz sheriffs.
Any particular sheriffs?
Fish, guys, Skull. There's a few other ones. I can't remember all their names.
And had you had encounters with these folks before?
Yes.
Positive, negative?
All negative.
And what, give us a little of the history, if you want.
They just got a major hard-on for parolees, majorly.
Hang on a second. What are you on parole for?
Possession of a controlled substance.
Hey, I'm on the fucking phone with 911.
And we're currently having a some big call. 911 is being called for a person on the sidewalk having some kind of a seizure, so that's happening at the same time as we're talking. But how long had you been living there?
4 years.
And was there a particular problem that's come up recently that might account for this behavior by the deputies?
The neighbors have been complaining that there's been a lot of drug usage down there, drug trafficking going on down in there, all kinds of stuff.
What's your evaluation of that?
That's a bunch of malarkey. It's just another reason to chase out the homeless from Santa Cruz.
So if you're on parole and there's drug use, that's an excuse to send you back to jail or prison.
Yeah.
So presumably if you were doing that, then, and it were, you know, is there any evidence of that, you would be back to the big house.
Yeah, in a heartbeat.
So when were you given this eviction notice?
God, just a couple of days ago.
And what were you told?
If I was caught back on the premises, I would be going back to, I'd go to prison or back to jail.
And what was your response to that?
Whatever, bring it.
And have you moved to another place?
No, I refuse.
So you're there saying, in essence, take me away?
Yeah.
Say what?
And how many people are you? Are other people also in this situation?
No, the other people that live there, there's a family that lives there, and two other elderly gentlemen that live there. The cops don't bother them. They don't tell them nothing.
Focus on you.
Yeah, just pretty much on me.
Polite.
Because I'm a bad influence on, I guess what they would call legalizing people that are just all about upholding the law because I'm an outlaw. because I made a mistake in my life.
What? What's your next move on this?
I'm gonna keep fighting him and make it understandable for the people that are trying to change their life to see that some people that get through time or whatever not can't change their ways because they don't want to be in that lifestyle anymore.
Have you been here for the last 4 years yourself, or have you been?
I've been here all my life.
You were born here?
Yes.
And do you have family here?
I've got my ex-wife, my daughter, and a couple other kids here that hold me here.
And what's their reaction to all this? You talk to them? Is there a reason that you aren't... I take it you're living independently away from them, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you not smoke right now?
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad.
Like a common sense sort of...
Someone's having a seizure. Who is having the seizure?
It's CC.
And do we know what the nature of the problem is here? Because I see a couple of police officers and a big fire engine, paramedic fire engine.
I don't know what caused it. She was hacking up blood and she wanted to lay down. We kept telling her don't lay down, and her old man was calling the paramedics.
And that's where they have pretty fast work here. They took about 2 or 3 minutes and they made it here, it looked like, while we were talking. Well, why don't you live with your other relatives? What's the deal?
We don't see eye to eye. Like I said, I'm the outlaw of everything in the Santa Cruz County. Even my parents, my mom's dead. My sister, my brother, and all them don't see my kind of reputation in life because I've made them mistakes that we all make somewhere in life. So they just frown down on me. I'm a worthless piece of shit in their book.
Whoa. Well, again, thank you. And we've been talking with
Doc Holliday.
Thank you, Doc.
Sure thing.
We're talking to Becky Johnson, who is actually a witness to the seizure situation. Go ahead, Becky.
This poor, unfortunate woman had some sort of seizure, and as she fell, one of the women here grabbed her and cushioned her fall so that she didn't hit her head on the sidewalk, thank God. And then she sat with her, turning her on her side, cradling her head while she was unconscious, and as she went through a couple more seizures, while somebody else got on the cell phone and called for 911 and waited for the police and the paramedics to arrive. So what are the paramedics? They come and they say, oh, can you not smoke here? I mean, it's common sense. It's poor, you know. I mean, she collapsed in the smoking section, and these fellow smokers did all that support work for her, and the first thing they do is get chastised by the authorities.
The only person I saw smoking was the guy I was interviewing. I didn't know. Is there anybody else smoking? I didn't think so.
Yeah, everybody in that group smokes. That's why they're out there, because they can't smoke on the property. That's why I'm here.
No,
this is the smoking section.
And it should be said, this happened at the corner of Cedar and Lincoln, across from Jack's Hamburgers, in front of the Calvary Episcopal Church, across from the area where the farmer's market in Santa Cruz happens every Wednesday, though this was a Monday.
You smoking, and I didn't see others smoking, except for the one guy who has had a kind of a little stub of a cigarette, whom I was interviewing. There's a Father Miller going up to check out the incident.
That's another 911 call here. Another police call to the Red Church.
Yes, well, it's a medical call. Anything you've noticed today, Becky, you want to comment on here?
Just that the full meal is sorely missed by the people here. They really, you know, it was almost like one day a week they got a really good meal and got treated like human beings. And they're still getting treated like human beings, but the meal isn't here, so it's sorely missed.
What, you got bagels and ham sandwiches or something?
Well, there were a bunch of donuts and coffee, and then now the meal is served, and it's bagels and coffee, so.
Three bagels. Bagels are good. And there's some egg salads and some ham, it looks like.
Oh, good, some protein.
There you go. Any other reports, Becky?
just that the solstice has come.
And gone.
We're in, it's summer, baby.
Thank you. And we're inside in the red shirt.
And before we go into that, let's take a musical break. Another number from Working. And that was another one from Working. Name of that one was Millwork. I like these songs, and I hope you do too. I should be getting a call shortly, as mentioned before, from Spilly Chili, a.k.a. Sandra Lee, who's a programmer, talk show host. I'm not sure how much of an old-timer she is with community TV, but she recently has been kind of raising the alarm about the cutbacks that are happening at community TV, and she should be calling in shortly. She actually did call in a few minutes ago, and she's going to be calling right back, and we'll hope to hear from her, you know, momentarily. And from you at some point, too. You can call in if you've got some questions about community TV, if you've got some comments about it. If you've got some comments about something you've heard on the show so far, you can call our alternate number, 469-3119. Grab your pencil, and note it down, 469-3119. And you can stay in touch
with the rest of the community. That's what this
station is kind of about, too, is staying in touch with the rest of the community. I think I was wrong, by the way, about suggesting there may be light at the end of the tunnel around the issue of a transmitter site for us. I think the activity is going to be taking down the transmitter and not having some new one posted. So, but I could be wrong, and Uncle Dennis may be correcting me when he comes into the studio at 8 o'clock with his 3-hour show, From the Cream to the Dregs. So you might want to hang for that one and get some more information about it. And we'll see what cooks with that. So, what else has been happening? Well, there's an SOS from John Colby, who has been apparently is facing what he describes as a retaliatory eviction by the John Stewart Company. And I may be talking about more of that later. But let's hear from, I suspect, Spilly Chili. Hello there.
Hey there, Robert. It's me, Spilly Chili.
Hey, Spilly Chili. That's the woman about the community TV station. What's cooking there, Spilly?
Hey, well, you know, we've got our big membership fundraising drive going on this weekend, starting tomorrow night and going Saturday night and then Sunday afternoon. And just want to encourage all your listeners out there in Radio Land to tune in and help support free speech in Santa Cruz County and Watsonville.
Well, you have to have you have to be on the cable to do that. I'm not sure how many of our listeners are, but some probably are.
You can actually watch it streaming live now on www.communitytv.org, and we're going to be on all three stations all weekend long, from 6 to 9 on Friday night and 6 to 9 on Saturday night and 2 to 5 on Sunday afternoon. And so you don't have to be a member of Community TV, or you don't have to be a subscriber to Charter or Comcast. You can watch us anytime just by going on the old Internet.
Yeah, well, that's good. Is that a new, relatively new thing? Or
we've been doing that for about, I guess it's been about a year, but it's just, started to kick in and catch on the last 6 months or so.
Because I know that, you were on, 26, 27, and 28, or 25, 26, and 27? Or
it's 25, 26, and 27 on Comcast, and 71, 72, and 73 on Charter in the Watsonville area. Mm-hmm. And over the weekend with this pledge drive, we're going to be on all six stations live.
So what's your goal in this, and how much money are you losing in the latest sequestering cutbacks?
That's a good question. Our goals for this particular fundraising event, which is our first ever fundraising event, which is, a prequel to what's going to be happening with us because of the budget cutbacks. We lost about $100,000 out of our funding for this year, and we're, this particular event is actually for the last fiscal year, from July until June of 2012-2013. So we weren't able to do our bowling tournament because of all the politics involved with what's happening at the station. And so one of my harebrained ideas was, why don't we just let people know that we're hurting? And that's kind of what we're doing, is just, letting the people know that, things are changing. The cable companies, as much as they'd want to help us, are kind of tied by legislation, and our county is going through some legalities and how they can fund us, and it's kind of left us in a position that if we want to keep public access alive, we're going to kind of have to fend for ourselves and show the county that there's people out there that like what we're doing and support what we're doing, and that it's the county's effort to give us the money we need to stay afloat. And so that's mostly what this whole thing's about, is more awareness that, things are changing. We need some help. We really need support more than anything for this event. If we can, show the county that we got a lot of people out there that care about community TV, and they're willing to give a little bit of money, and the county should give a little bit of money, and we can keep everything afloat, and we'll have free speech for time to come. But it's really going to have to take some support from the community, not necessarily with a lot of money, but just a lot of support, and you know, showing us that they love us by calling in over this pledge drive thing.
Well, you know, I have a Huff Homeless United meeting every Wednesday, and we had to, it was partially attended yesterday, but there was an interesting point brought up that at the city council meeting on Tuesday, I think money was appropriated for some golf vehicle or some such thing, and there's a surplus this year, or there's, you know, there's no, Martine Bernal, the city manager, has said there's no particular, they're out of the economic crisis. It seems to me like what's happening is a shift in priorities to from you know, social service safety net to public hysteria, into more anti-homeless campaigns, more money for the police department. What's the reason, as far as you can see, that funding is being cut back to community TV? Is there any specific discussion that's come up in the legislature or the bodies that fund you?
Well, there was legislation that passed in 96, I think it was, and we made a big stink about it then, but we didn't get a whole lot of support, and that kind of changed how we can spend the money that the county's collecting. You know, the county collects about $750,000, in franchise and peg fees from the cable companies. And out of that, they give us about $500,000. And so they're pocketing quite a bit of change, into their kitty, from our revenue sources. And now what the legislation says was that, well, public access needs to stay alive, and you need to keep public access alive, but we're not going to give you the money to pay for certain things at public access. So what the legislation says is that the county can, you know, pay for equipment, for the facility, but they can't pay for any staffing or any, you know, management or anything like that. And so, you know, that's really cool if you're a volunteer-driven organization and you're structured that way. But unfortunately, you know, for the 20 years that community TV's been around, we've had funding. And, you know, again, it's not like the county's giving us money out of the kitty. They're collecting money, more money than what they're giving us. And so their thing is that, well, if they get rid of community TV, they lose out on all that funding. And, well, they certainly don't want to do that. So they're going to try to keep community TV around, but they're going to change how it's structured, that it's going to be more government stuff. And so that if they have to pay money, say that the city of Santa Cruz decides that they're going to chip in a little bit more money to cover their city council meetings, well, that's going to mean one less thing that's going to get paid for public access. And so the structuring of how all this is going down is pretty funky. And, you know, the main thing is the voice of God and the legislation wants to get rid of free speech. And I think we all realize that.
What is
just one way of doing it, one way of cutting off one of our legs.
What is the what percentage? Well, I mean, how has funding changed in the last few years?
Well, it hasn't changed yet. That's the big thing, you know. None of this takes place until next year. Everything should be the same this year. But, you know, they put this big old fear thing over community TV that...
Who is that?
Oh, you know, because things are changing next year, we're going to start pulling money this year and putting it aside. None of that's really fair, but that's what they're doing.
Spilly, who is they? Who are you talking about?
The Board of Supervisors here in the County of Santa Cruz are basically controlling us like puppets, and they're making us do things that a lot of the members don't want to do.
And so the Board of Supervisors is actually made a change in policy then recently.
Well, they forced us into it. They said either you make these changes or we're going to pull the plug on you, and they fear factored us. Big time, and scared, you know, 80% of our members.
But they are the ones who've decided for some reason to make the change. Is this a unanimous decision by the board, or is it, you know, is it a few, is it a Zach friend at work, or what's going on?
Things are going, and from what I've seen in the few meetings, you know, I went to one, but I watched a lot on TV, and It's there's a lot of stuff going on behind the doors that nobody knows about, not even us members at the station. There's only a few privileged ears that actually know what's going on.
You know, it seems to me...
The lady named Susan Marinello, who's pretty much calling all the shots.
That's Susan Mariello, yeah.
Her, if she's listening, her, please come on my issue show the second Wednesday of July and... Let's talk, because I'd like to know what's up her sleeve. She seems to be the one that's calling the shots.
Well, you know, it seems to me that since, you know, the board of stoops, or stupid vipers, as some have called them, I used to call them that, actually, is getting a large chunk of money from you, you guys have some power yourselves. You could insist that you will not proceed unless, you know, they continue funding you in the fashion to which you are accustomed. I mean, it seems
well, you know, that should have been how it's taken place. But, you know, we've had so many, you know, horrible leaders over the last 3 years. And, you know, they're partly responsible for that, too. You know, half of our board is appointed through the government agencies. And they're the ones that are picking our leaders. And they've done a horrible job in picking our leaders. And, you know, I hate to say it, but I think they're doing a horrible job in leading us down through this transition.
Who of the...
But my standpoint is I want to save public access. And,
let me ask you, who are these leaders?
You know, my head to some of the
Spilly,
bullshit
Spilly,
to save
let me
public
inter- Spilly,
access.
Spilly, whoa. Who are these leaders that have led you down the garden path?
Well, we have, you know, of our 11-member board, we have 6 appointed board people and 5 elected board people. And those members have now decided that they're going to cancel all of our elections, so we can't even elect board members. They're all going to be appointed now. And this was all done through fear, you know, basically threats. Either you change the structure of your organization or we're pulling funding. Not that it should have been that, hey, you're making revenue off of us. We're providing you a great service. The community loves us. Let's get on with it. No, it's like, oh, you know, hey, we're going to cut your funding. We're going to pull the plug on you unless if you change your...
Well, Spilly, can't the staff strike? Can't you insist that, you know, there'll be a strike at community TV unless they restore the funding, restore a fair electoral process, that sort of thing?
You know, Robert, that would be a perfect world, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean...
our members rolled over. You know, we had one election, there wasn't enough votes to pass it, so even though we all were saying, no, don't do this, they went ahead and had another election, and they changed the rules that it doesn't have to be a majority, it's just whoever voted, and, you know, so they changed the rules to force this through, to take away our membership rights, and, you know, so darn it, you know, I'm like stuck in this paradox, Robert, you know, I so want community TV to go through.
Spilly, let me interrupt you and ask, how is anyone written?
All my ideas.
Spilly, sorry. Spilly, is anyone?
To work, but darn these guys.
Yeah, Spilly, has anyone actually written about this in terms of, can somebody go online and read an expose of all the, this election happened and there and the rules were changed and then this bad leadership did this and that, or is it all sort of murky?
You know, our press and what we have to deal with here in Santa Cruz, and there's been quite a few stories over the last 6 months, one of which I was on the cover of the Sunday paper talking about, you know, how I felt that this election thing was wrong back then before it happened. And so there is stuff out there, but a lot of the stuff was, you know, not presented properly. In fact, there's a news story I just saw that Romney Dunbar is coming to community TV. And who wants Romney Dunbar? Not me. You know, this isn't any of my idea, but... Oh, he's going to save community TV and
tell us the story wrong.
They got the information wrong.
Tell us who Rodney Dunbar. Tell us, for those who don't know, who is Rodney Dunbar?
He's some celebrity guy that, you know, to be honest with you, all I know that he's ever done is a housing show, trying to sell houses to people. And one of John Leopold, and God bless you, John, he said, you know, oh, that's just what we need community TV to turn into the Hotel House Channel. And, you know, it's like, damn, you know, whose idea is this? You know, not, I sure don't want that. And, oh, no, they're going to come up with money now to pay him to do a show so it'll make community TV good, and it'll make him look good. And,
you know, you came.
Oh, wait a minute,
Spilly,
you know, where the hell did this?
Spilly, you came into the studio a couple months ago. Actually, about 4 or 5 months ago, and urged people to come to a March meeting of the Board of Supervisors to, you know, defend community TV. And I think I got the word from you afterward in an interview I couldn't play because it was screwed up technically, that there was, that they had, the immediate threat to community TV, at least, was sort of set aside, but it actually, or delayed a year. But it sounds like the threat has not been delayed. It sounds like it's an ongoing sort of, I don't know, authoritarianization of taking the station out of the hands of the community and putting it in the hands of, I don't know, experts, government officials, people who just want to run government programs without the community TV. Staff will no longer be paid. I wanted to ask you also, what's the staff, what percentage of staff has been paid, and what's the budget for the staff if it were to be fully funded, what's required to pay the staff fairly and fully?
Well, you know, I don't have the numbers here. You know, it's public information, but I don't have the numbers. I know that there's approximately 7 to 8 paid staff people, an executive director, programming coordinator, office manager, we got a couple government technicians that cover the government shows. So there's probably, you know, a handful of people. But even right now, you know, one of the things that they're forcing us into doing is merging with CMAP, which is the Gilroy Hollister version of community TV. And they're supposedly going to take half of their staff and half of our staff and make this wonderful conglomerate of government-controlled bureaucracy where it's an appointed board through the government agencies, and they're going to pretty much tell us what we're going to show and what we're not going to show. And, you know, I just want, you know, one of the pluses for us members here was we were going to be able to show our programs now in Gilroy and Hollister. And so I submitted a lot of my music shows, some of my political shows back in May for Gilroy to start showing over there. And here we are in the last week of June, and not only are they not showing my shows, but they weren't showing anybody's shows over there. They had completely pulled public access from their website. I mean, there was no mention of public access. And I'm thinking, here we are from our pledge drive and fund drive, and we're merging with a company that's killing public access. And, shit, you know, so I'm queasy, dude. I'm queasy about this whole thing.
Sounds like you need to get queasy with a bunch of other people and vomit simultaneously at the right time. You know, I understand. We're talking with Spilly Chili of Community TV. If you have any questions for him, you can call in 469-3119. 469-3119. Apparently, Community TV is getting the reshaping, the commercial reshaping, or the I don't know, government free speech elimination for reshaping, as you've described it. But
they want to cover the government shows, and, you know, the Coonerty family wants to, you know, their smiley face on every, you know, waking moment of TV land. It's so Big Brother, it's ridiculous. They're trying to get rid of, you know, our silly shows. And, you know, so again, that's what's going to be so important for the community to show support this weekend. And even if you don't got any money, just call us.
Let me be the devil's advocate. What's the point of supporting you this weekend if all this funding is going to essentially be controlled by people who are going to dump the programs in Gilroy and Hollister, dump the staff, and proceed to downsize the station or turn it into a conduit for government programs only?
And that's one of my big concerns. You know, like I wouldn't have brought it up if I wasn't concerned about it, but I think realistically for what we're trying to do this weekend is if we can show our county supervisors through this event that, man, the community's out there, they love community TV, they love the public access stuff, they're going to step up here. That means when it comes election time next year, all these guys, their butts are going to be in a sling. I think they're going to think twice about what they're going to do for the contract for next year. So It's really, really, really more important than ever for the community to show their support and their love this weekend. And then, you know, we got a leg to stand on. You know, if the community doesn't show up this weekend, we're fucked.
You know,
that's pretty much it.
I hear you. And, of course, other people out there are hearing you, too, that you're going to be doing this this marathon throughout the weekend. I guess even I've been invited to be on the show.
I sure hope you're coming down. You know, one of our big things on community TV is having people like you and Steve Plaich and, you know, the Sin Bars people and, you know, all Becky Johnson's and all the people that we can get on the shows to show that we have this voice. And, you know, you guys that are out there doing the activism.
You know, I hear you.
And so that's why, you know, it's really important that you guys come in on our pledge drive and show, you know, here we are too. You know, we want this to stick around.
Yeah, I note that. I remember when I was KPFA was a station I used to support in the old days. And I remember the first time I got on free radio was when we began transmitting illegally in front of KPFA, broadcasting into the station on the sidewalk. And then I guess six years later, there were masses of people surrounding KPFA, camping out on the street, demanding that the National stop the attempt to sell KPFA. And it was, in other words, it looked like, you know, the way the change happened is because there was massive outpouring of sentiment. And I don't necessarily mean, although I wish you luck with this marathon, and I'll certainly, you know, come on in to do what I can. I think it seems to me that the kind of action like people are taking in Brazil and Turkey and all other countries is far more likely to have have impact than begging and pleading with Zach Friend and Neil Coonerty and even John Leopold that they don't, please don't cut our budget, you know, that sort of shit. But
that's what I'm saying. It's going to take a voice louder than mine. And, you know, again, this is an open to the public thing. On Sunday, we're going to have the back parking lot open for people to come down and party with us. And we're going to talk to people back there and say, you know, why do you support community TV? So, you know, I think a voice like that is going to be a lot louder than me saying, oh, you guys are fucked. You know, it's like...
Right, but I'm saying is there need to be...
I've been doing that for years. It isn't working. The voice of the communities is what's going to take...
Right, I hear you. I hear you, Spilly. I'm just thinking that it requires more than... You know, 3 hours for three days running of a telethon to get this change. It requires people who are running this to make the kind of determined stand that says we will not work under a station where the rules abridge free speech and cut back things to the extent that it's not going to work for us. But it sounds like that may be your opinion, but may not be the feelings of the rest of the staff. Have you sounded them out as to how they feel?
Everybody's just confused right now because we just really don't know what's going to happen. And I'm just an independent producer. I'm not on the payroll of the station whatsoever. I do all my work for free. And so
I hear you.
Probably paid people that might have a different opinion than mine, but I think the general consensus is that nobody really knows what the hell is going to happen.
Well, you know, let me ask, here we are doing this merger.
Let our programming coordinator go, and it turns out the programming coordinator from Gilroy was supposed to take over. Well, they let her go, too, so now there's no programming coordinators at either station. And so it's that kind of stuff is darn right crazy.
It sounds pretty wretched, but I think it's also, you know, interesting to me. I've heard that you yourself have been... discriminated against by the police, that you yourself were mugged near Community Credit Union, and because perhaps of your controversial show content, you couldn't...
Oh, no, that wasn't me. That was Bobby. But, he tries to raise this stink about a lot of issues. You know, he's an activist. He's on my show. He does Santa Cruz and Bobby Ackerley. He constantly tries to just, you know, shed some light on some horrible situations, and is constantly shut down, not only, you know, through the police in the county, but even at the station, you know, because sometimes his views are a little more radical than the rest of ours. And so there's, you know, even in our free speech society that we try to promote, there's, you know, some discrimination, and, you know, but that wasn't myself. No, You know, I'm having some legal problems, but it has nothing to do with the
community. I got you. Are you familiar with the incidents involved? Because it sounded certainly inappropriate and unfortunate if there was police failing to respond to do a police report on an incident where he was mugged. Is that?
Yeah, I was outside of the bank over there by Woodstock Pizza. Some guy cold cocked him at the ATM and took off of his money and wallet and stuff. And he, you know, 3 years later, still hasn't seen any sort of action on that behalf. His big problem right now is, you know, he lives over there at the Redwood Commons. And Granite Rock has taken over the lot behind their complex, and they've been dumping toxic chemicals and road grindings and granite that's seeping into everybody's apartments there. And so he's called Granite Rock, and they said, well, we don't care what you say. And he's called the county and says, well, we've given them a contract, so they have the right to do that. And, you know, and here all these people are getting exposed to toxic chemicals, and he can't get any sort of relief whatsoever. So, that's related to the TV station or not, I don't know, but it sure is a mess.
Was there, in fact, a failure to take a police report? That's what I was wondering.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. Anyway, yeah, we've been talking with Spilly Chili, who, again, is having a www.communitytv.org marathon this weekend, 6 to 9 Friday, 6 to 9 Saturday, and 2 to 5 on Sunday. Is that right?
Yeah.
And that's channels 25, 26.
I'm on the radio, dude. I'm on pirate radio.
On 25, 26, and 27 here in Santa Cruz, if you're a Comcast person, or 71, 72, and 73 in Watsonville on Charter. They're trying to get some financial power, though, unless you're willing to, you know, actually back it up with some real action at the station. I don't know that you have any real power, unless you're willing to say, you know, we're gonna lock down the station, we're gonna refuse to, you know, broadcast, we're gonna call to the greater community. You need to articulate your issues in a clear public way, I think, that, you know, that might generate the kind of support that you need. I think if it's just, you know, posed as, oh, we're just, you know, modernizing you and, you know, coalescing you with other groups, collapsing you into another station in order to save money, that always plays well, however false it may be and or partial a story. But if you can show that there are other issues involved, make that really clear, you know, the Santa Cruz community, at least some of them, some of us may stand there with you. Just a thought.
Well, you know, I've been doing everything I can ever since I first heard about this merger and what they've been doing. I've been going to our board meetings. You know, I go to the board of supervisor meetings and say, look, there's still another option. And so, you know, I do everything I can to try to get that word out. But like in so many things, you know, it's like people still don't believe 9/11, man. You know, I was just listening to NPR today. NPR, Talk of the Nation. Some guy comes on and starts talking about the Building 7 collapsing. The guy goes, oh, a truther, and says, I'm not even going to talk to you, and hangs up on him. So that's National Public Radio's version of free speech. You know, all we got left here is our free speech. And, you know, I don't know, maybe people just don't give a shit, and maybe 9/11 was done by terrorists. You know, maybe that's what everybody just wants to hear, but that's not what I'm saying. That's not what community TV is trying to project, and if we're the bad guys for doing that, and
whoever,
if you want to know the truth,
well,
about
whoever did 9/11 or whatever, I think the real issue for us is locally to make sure that, you know, voices that don't get heard get out. That's what free radio does. That's what community TV in part does. And as again, I think, you know, when the hammer is coming down, it's going to take making those issues really clear to the community, not to the Board of Supervisors. They don't give a shit, you know, not to, you know, I mean, if you need to put out some, I think, some real clear one-page statements about the four main issues here about what's going on, you know, and that something that ordinary people in the streets, ordinary listeners can understand, not something that you could persuade the Sentinel to do or the Santa Cruz Weekly or any of those idiots. You know,
well, you know, that's just it. Is that, you know, it's all been, you know, sugar-coated that this whole merger is going to save community TV.
Well, you have to.
Oh, Romney Dunbar now is going to save
community. Right. Well, what you have to do is you have to cut through that shit. You know, because it sounds like you have other.
You're talking to me.
You have other.
So it's really tough. You know.
But what I'm saying is if you. It's not you. It's if you put
it's
out
so
the.
So important today.
If you put out the information. It doesn't have to necessarily come from you. It can be something that can be put out and distributed by different people. But, you know.
Yeah, well,
a fact sheet, a nice fact sheet about what's actually going on.
And we do have that, and that's posted there on every corner of the building there, the five things you can do to show your support for community TV. And I think that's on our website, too.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I think we're a little too late with that one.
Right, right.
But, you know, again, there are, you know, the. Showing your support this weekend at this pledge drive is now the most important thing. If you want to save community TV, public access, showing your support this weekend is going to make a huge difference because those guys are coming down too, man. Kennedy's going to be there.
So I will see you.
Leopold's going to be there. And if they see our phone ringing with people saying, hey, we want
community. I'll see you in the studio then on, I guess, I'm going to be coming in on Saturday, I guess, is when that's
Sunday afternoon.
I'm glad you clarified it. Sunday at 2 o'clock, I'm going to be, after I do my show here on the radio.
Oh, man, have we got some talent for you. I've got this beautiful Sin from Gilroy, Resistant Me. She was one of our Star Makers contestants, and she's been on Spilly Chili. We've got Jamie Kelly Curtis coming in. We've got Toby Gray coming in, Stormy Strong's coming down. We've got politicians. It's just going to be a one off the hook show, so it's going to be so much fun, people. You're really going to want to see this stuff.
Hey, well, listen, Spilly, thank you for calling in and talking with us. And again, to everybody out there, if you want to be a part of this process, just tune in and I guess donate or speak up or. You know,
speaking up is the number one thing you can do. Just call and say, hey, we love what you do. Keep it up. Become a member. That's the next thing. If we have enough members that we can show, look, you know, we've got 300 people now. If we come out of this with 1,000 members by the end of this thing, that's going to make a huge difference. And so there's a lot of things you people can do to help us out right now. And I'm not talking about digging in your pocket. Just showing your love is going to be half the battle.
That's www.community.
Thank you, Robert, for giving me this chance.
Sure, no problem, man. www.communitytv.org is the where it's going to be streaming. And we've been talking with Spilly Chili. Thanks, Spilly.
Hey, my pleasure. Love and peace to everyone out there. Have a great night.
Hey, same to you, man. Bye-bye.
All right, bye now.
And that was Spilly Chili of Community TV. I've been on his show a number of times. Again, you probably heard the skepticism in my voice about if you are giving, you know, I don't know, even you get 1,000 members and they're all can be herded in the wrong direction because nobody's giving them the right information and nobody's organizing or taking a stand against this stuff other than saying, oh, well, see, we're really a good station because we can get a lot of people together. But together to do what, though, of course, is the question. And anyway, I don't know. I'll be there on Sunday at 2 o'clock chattering at you from Community TV. And who knows? We'll see what happens. Ah, we have a caller. Let's see what's up. Hey there, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Free Radio?
Yes, you are on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. Hi, it's David Selba.
Uh-huh, hi, David.
I certainly am going to call and try to cheer them up. This weekend, public access TV, but I won't have any money for a while yet. I did get some bureaucracy finally all straightened up on my veterans claim, and as soon as I get some money, I'll start being able to do some good things with it. But right now, you know, I'm just, so many of us are just from hand to mouth, you know. But I'd like to encourage people to go ahead and call. If those county supervisors are down there, they hear those phones ringing, it is going to impress them. So that's one thing where Chili was right. Where Chili was wrong is that you were right. They have to be ready to organize. If they start taking away airtime from them and start giving to Rodney Dunbar and all these kind of other stuff that isn't really public access anymore, They need to draw the line and claim the station.
Well,
so I wish them luck and I love them all. Thank you for having Chile on. That was really enlightening. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. You know, it seems like unfortunately that's already happening, and because you know they're not getting the Gilroy stations are not playing their shows according to Spilly Chile, and so and you know complaining about it is good, but and then you have to go beyond complaining to make demands that the whole process change, or else it's just so much white noise in the background for the Board of Supervisors. So I don't know.
Well, you know, in these hard times like this, it's so easy for us to, like, just say, well, you know, I have to take care of my own family, my own house. But the reality is that the more we all work together and pitch in together, the better we're going to get through this stupid, stupid, greedy, pig capitalist crash that we're all still suffering under. And we're gonna come out of this together if we work together. So that's all I need to say, Robert, and I thank you for being there. I hope we don't lose Free Radio for any length of time at all.
Well, thank you, David.
Sure.
And phone lines are open, 427-3772, 469-3119. That's 427-3772, 469-3119. Let's go music.
If I could have been what I could have been, I could have been something. If what I could be had been left to be, I would have been something. A tower of strength, a center of power, at $10 an hour. I could have done a big thing, some luck to do. I wanted to, I would have done big things. Swam a few rivers, climbed a few hills, paid all my bills. Now it's just dreams that I'm stuck with. Hell, that ain't a lot to show. Down inside where it counts, I know. If I could have gone where I could have gone, I could have gone places.
Could have been from Workin', Studs Terkel's musical. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, soon to be off the air, it looks like, but still streaming at freakradio.org for those of you who have computers or access to computers subsequently, where these shows are archived, mine particularly. You can find it on the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website, HUF Santa Cruz, HUFFSantaCruz.org. And a pretty complete listing of shows for the last, almost the last 8 or 9, maybe 10 years. A lot of shows way back there. Not all the shows are described. I'm working on doing that. But the more recent ones are generally described, although not all of them. And check them out. If there's a particular subject you want to follow, if a particular person's interview you want to listen to, I also refer to these shows in stories I write and comments I make on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and also in the Sentinel's website. It's topics, comments, and other comments over at the Santa Cruz Weekly. Actually, recently, Jake Pierce, who I haven't had too many friendly words to pass on because of what I regarded as police puffery, kind of passing on police PR stuff rather uncritically and favorably, that I think is the detriment of the community. I've noticed that my comments have not appeared. They seem to have disappeared or never appeared when I write about needle hysteria and the public safety hoax that's going down. There was a meeting this week of the public safety task force, the public hysteria citizens task force, as I call it, where Fred Keeley gave a big presentation. It was mentioned in the paper, and some of the priorities actually don't sound so bad, except that the whole thing was created to deal with illegal camping, needles, drug use, the menace of the stranger, and nothing about really violent crimes, assaults, rapes, that sort of thing, which, although that's been the sort of the poster child, the Baker Butler killings, which again received a big hoopla ta-da at the city council on Tuesday, awards and more, you know, wonderful praise for these dead officers and so forth. Very opportunistic, as was pointed out at the ACLU meeting on Monday, which I suppose I should make a couple of comments on. I haven't written about it. You may recall the ACLU, our local American Civil Liberties Union, I have absolutely very little respect for because of its failure to address homeless civil rights issues locally, in contrast to ACLUs in other cities. And a month ago, they excluded me and others from the meeting. Peter Goldblum or Geldblum, I'm never quite sure how to pronounce his name. I've got to work on that one. Sorry, Peter. He arbitrarily and falsely declared that the meetings were had always been closed, and they hadn't. I'd been at previously there. All the meetings were open. But in order perhaps to not have people pressing him and the board on the issues they've been ignoring, the sleeping ban, the sitting ban, the curfews around town, police harassment and abuse, seizure of homeless property, the obvious issues that really involve illegal and unconstitutional behavior against the most vulnerable people in our society here. This time, Steve Plaich was chairing the meeting. He's a vice chair, and he so generously declared we were all going to be let in, as though, you know, this was some big concession. But he didn't clarify what the policy was. So apparently this can really change with the whim of the person in charge. There's no protection, no civil rights, no procedural rights for ACLU members who want to attend their board meetings. And it's not worth a lot of talk because it's been going on for so long. But the ACLU members as individuals have a lot, I think, of strong opinions that I agree with. You know, they were concerned about a letter the ACLU sent out about the Baker Butler killings, that they felt that they shouldn't be praising these officers so much necessarily, unless they had found these officers as individuals in their work on the force had done something that merited civil liberties support. And, of course, Baker is a notorious abuser of civil liberties, or was, during the period from 1988 to 2005. And I can't speak from beyond that period, really. I didn't hear much about him after that. Butler, I got some bad reports, and there were also some good reports about her. But the point was that they shouldn't be praised unless there's a specific vote by the board and the membership that these individuals are particularly noteworthy in what they've done. And that would involve actually looking at what they've done and not just jumping on the hysteria bandwagon, which is using their deaths to forward a whole anti-liberal agenda, attacking releasing people from jail, attacking the opening of marijuana dispensaries, attacking rights for homeless people, all this stuff, which is bread and butter to some authoritarian Republican types and Democratic types, too, who are in power. And witness the Obama regime's expansion of attacks on whistleblowers, continuation of force feeding at Guantanamo, increased foreign wars abroad. I mean, if they're in power, they use it, and they continue to use it. And this is true in Santa Cruz, too. Unless people like in Turkey and Brazil and maybe Bulgaria, I was reading this happening in Bulgaria, too, stand up in massive numbers and say, no way. And that's what I was suggesting to Spilly Chili be done for community TV, that he issue a call to that, and issue a call that isn't, you know, it's very specific in terms of the abuses that the station and the staff are facing. If he isn't clear about it, people can't clearly get behind it. See, that's the problem. And obviously it's not an easy thing to do, and he's a voice in the wilderness, but he's a voice that seems to be saying things that, if they're true, are important and relevant. So those are some of the things that were happening earlier this week. There was movement in Connecticut and in Illinois for a homeless bill of rights. They passed, I think, both houses of the legislature. They were going to be signed, or maybe not, by the governors. Again, I haven't communicated with homeless activists in those states or closely parsed those bills to see if they're actually going to have a real impact on the right, for example, to sleep somewhere that homeless people need as a primary right before you even start. The right to use public spaces without being harassed. I mean, it's all very well to say, well, you can't criminalize someone because you say they're homeless. Well, they don't have to say anything. You have to say, oh, no, you're not. It's not about your being homeless. It's about your falling asleep after 11 o'clock at night outside. We wouldn't do it because you're homeless. We'll do that even if you have a home. See, we're not discriminating, is the problem with simply saying that the homeless status can't be the basis for discrimination. Unless the courts so interpret it, and local courts, at least in Santa Cruz, have been horribly subservient to the political interests, unless there's some countervailing power. At some time in the late 80s and early 90s, and even after that, we found some judges sort of, you know, urging the city councils and the board of supervisors, mostly the city council, to consider changing their laws or making some concessions because they're getting tired of all these homeless people showing up in court and saying, I have a necessity to sleep at night. I want a trial, and, you know, and packing the courts with this stuff. But that isn't happening so much anymore, partially because we aren't as organized, those of us who are activists, as we were in those days, and partially because the courts have become more calcified, right-wing, indifferent to basic rights. And there's this activist hysteria, paranoia, and bigotry on the right. And I'm sorry, those are the words that I think describe groups like Take Back Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Neighbors, where they claim as they're going after crime. The reality is they're describing survival behaviors as crime and painting as criminals people who are poor and outside. I'm going to turn back now to some more interviews and perhaps an occasional phone call. And thank you, David Silva, for calling in. You are a regular caller, and my thanks to you for listening and calling, and to other people, too, who are listening and perhaps not calling, or obviously not calling and maybe not listening. But I'll keep talking.
We're inside in the Red Church listening to some music. on the Bagel Squad. It's Steve and Mel. Sins are getting washed away.
And this, of course, is every Monday between 5 and 7 at the Red Church at Lincoln and Cedar. This goes on, although, as it was mentioned by Becky Johnson, the meals have been severely cut back, in part because I think there was a, and we're going to hear this probably in an interview shortly, a staff member, a key staff member died, and no one's taken her place. Let's hear some more.
Well, you got a ticket today.
Yes, I did.
We're talking with Zoran. And what was the ticket for, Zoran?
I went into Pete's Coffee, and I'm a little bit jovial there because I drink too much alcohol.
You're a drunken slut.
Yeah, and I love Pete's Coffee so much because it was my home, but now I'm not allowed.
And so what was the ticket about?
Well, I have to pay a fine because I came back to Pete's Coffee after being told to leave, to say goodbye because I'm flying to New York. And when I came back in to say goodbye, they told me immediately they were going to call the police.
Well, what had you done before that provoked such consternation?
Oh, you know, my need for attention. I was an actor. I was I probably flirted with the customers.
And did you get arrested this time?
No, this time they just ticketed me, thank God.
What were you ticketed for?
They said that after I was been 86 from Peter, it said I'm not allowed to come back, and if I come back, they will ticket me or even arrest me. So,
was it trespass? Or?
I'm not sure. I didn't ask the technicality. That's a good question.
Do you have a copy of the ticket?
I do.
It'll be on the ticket.
Thank you.
We've been talking
for your knowledge.
Well, any fool can say. Again, we've been talking with.
I'm Zoran.
Thank
I
you,
love
sir.
You, Santa Cruz.
Thank you, Zoran.
We love you, Robert.
Thank you, Zoran.
And I get annoyed with Zoran at different times. Perhaps too many hugs too quickly, too little respect for my spatial dimensions at times. Yeah, but it's interesting. It's kind of a commentary on the community that if he walks in to say goodbye, because he's going to New York, if he's accurate in what he's saying, and he still gets cited. Maybe he had a problem there before. It shows to me a kind of growing coldness and harshness in the community, which I have seen at different other points. Glenda, a homeless woman who was in her wheelchair, and I interviewed her and played her interview last Sunday, told that she couldn't hold up a sign out near the West Side Safeway, even though she was quite legal for her to do so. She was falsely so informed by police, it sounds like, although perhaps there's some part of the story that I'm missing. Police acting as agents of bigoted, well-heeled neighbors who live in the area, or perhaps not so well-heeled, but I don't know, badly intended neighbors who somehow feel that they have a right to exclude people from the public spaces if they don't like the way they look.
So, Becky, the reason that this crowd is so much smaller and this food is so much less is why?
Well, one of the mainstay organizers for many years got very ill and then just passed. And she was, her name was Kelly, and she was really one of the main people making sure that there was a good meal here every week. So without her, no one stepped into her shoes. So this is what they have. They still have a kitchen. I mean, it's possible that somebody else could step in and coordinate this because, you know, it's a lot of donated food and volunteer labor.
This could be your opportunity, Becky, to move into become the Huff Woman of the Year.
I don't have those skills. I've never managed a kitchen before. And, I could probably volunteer for a task, but that wouldn't be one of them.
And we've been talking with
Becky Johnson.
Thank you, Becky. We have a researcher. What's your name, sir? Colin Campbell Clyde. Colin, you've been checking out the internet and the Santa Cruz City Council website.
Yeah, and
Boy, I'm going to have to go get a screenshot of this before it airs so they don't just take it down right away. But I thought it was very interesting that you look under the Santa Cruz City website, there's a drop-down menu that I think is like community resources or something like that, right? And most of the items in the drop-down menu are directly related to the government in one way or the other, okay? And then sandwiched right in the middle of all of that is Santa Cruz Neighbors, which is a private, not-for-profit organization. There's no other citizens' organizations listed, just this one. So it's sort of like this, and it's sort of listed on the city website in such a way that you'd almost be led to believe that Santa Cruz Neighbors is like an agency of the city government or something like that.
I'd say that Santa Cruz Neighbors is a sort of a bigoted group that's been pressuring to eliminate homeless people's right to park in neighborhoods, stepping up police patrols, supporting anti-homeless legislation, and so forth.
Well, I really think of them as the people who are offended by people sleeping in their cars because it's ruining my experience in the neighborhood, as opposed to saying, like, worrying about, like, wow, that person living in their car must be having a really hard time, right? Like, that's not what their emphasis is. It's all, oh, well, this is a nuisance to me. Okay, so there's no empathy there for the person who's been economically displaced.
Deborah Elston, who's she's a president or leader, or certainly principal, one of the organizers of Santa Cruz Neighbors, was one of the prime speakers both at City Council and at the Public Hysteria Committee, which calls itself the Public Safety Committee of City Council, supporting these laws, increasing misdemeanor penalties if you don't leave a park after having interfered with the operation of the park, or if you first makes a complaint to that effect, you have to stay away for 24 hours and go to court on the whole issue, plus the medians and the roundabouts. You're no longer allowed to stand there with a sign. She was a principal witness and speaker in favor of these ordinances.
So you have this organization that is lobbying the city government to change their policies, okay? And whether you like those policies or you dislike those policies is up for debate. What I am concerned about is, why are they listed on the city website in such a way as to almost give them a de facto endorsement of their policy ideas and their ideology when no other organizations are listed? Why is this one organization being given the special privilege of being featured on the city government website, which is taxpayer funded?
Well, be glad it's not Take Back Santa Cruz. Oh, wait! Take Back Santa Cruz has just been put up there. No, just kidding, of course.
Not to my knowledge.
Yes, not to my knowledge either. We're talking with a critic of Indy Bay. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Anyway, Razor Ray, I just want to point out that what's essentially happened with Take Back Santa Cruz and the Clean Team recently is, quite simply, Indy Bay got used. That video was bullshit. Anybody that's ever met a junkie in their entire life knows that if you poke at them with a stick, they're going to come at you with a butcher knife. They're not. It was the ultimate caricature of a junkie as visualized by some surfer dudes, and they created the video as some sort of homeless bashing porn, perhaps, for their friends' enjoyment. And then it got around, and they realized what was going on and how they couldn't validate any of it at all. But what really galled...
And this is Razor Ray talking. He's got his opinion on this, but having spoken to the guy who made the video, I have a different opinion. I think it was we're talking about the Ken Collins video, the video of the Clean Team guy whose face is obscured in one version of the video, and his voice is also obscured in another version, poking at a homeless person in a sleeping bag and denouncing him as lazy and abusing him as part of one of their cleanups. And this is a video I've talked about. I've written a lot about it. On Santa Cruz Indie Media, you can find it. It was taken down several times, but it's still available to look at on Santa Cruz Indie Media. And it's one that I had thought I might play before the Santa Cruz City Council, more important, before the community, because it's already been sent to the Santa Cruz City Council, I believe. But the community needs to see it, because this is, unfortunately, the kind of hostility and abusive behavior that's prompted by the Take Back Santa Cruz mythology, the Clean Team mythology, the drug war hysteria, I think, that's that targets people who are poor and outside. And let's hear some more from Razor Ray.
With me was the fact that even after it was outed as a ruse for Take Back Santa Cruz to ostensibly distance themselves as a kinder and gentler organization than that video would imply, giving them the opportunity to frame the whole situation, IndieBay still continued to redact my comments regarding the fact.
IndieBay censoring you, could this be?
Oh, 80% of my comments absolutely vanish.
But how can people learn the truth if you're censored? Where should they go?
Antiimperial.tumblr.com.
There you go. There is the way to go. But what about those fires that have been set up in the hinterlands? Have you read about those?
I heard about one. The one that happened the other day, that was semi-inevitable. I could see someone going over the hill if they felt that their vehicle was illegitimately towed or something and take it out on the neighbors. That maybe made that happen. I'm not rationalizing that or validating it. I'm simply saying I could see that happening.
It might happen to me.
Haven't seen it this year, seen it other years. Don't even like to talk about it because it's too tragic. A few years ago, there were a whole bunch of, like, independent fires all over the woods around here. And what I saw the next morning was a bunch of very tired, homeless people that couldn't go home last night.
Their grass was burned up, so to speak.
And there were firefighters running around the woods who are immediately going to finger them if they just happened upon it and say, well, what do you know about all this is what happens, right? But basically, it's a variation on the kids getting out of school and running in packs and, like, homeless bashing. You can set a little bunch of little spot fires, too, and drive them all out of the woods. I don't think adults do this. I think kids do this 16 to, what, 24-year-old leader type.
Conduct or police conduct as usual downtown on Pacific Avenue is to quote, give them shit back.
Well, what they're attempting to do is dissuade people from hanging out. Just by the very presence of, and the security guards and all that, that is 90% of what they do. The thing is, they're looking for victims. They're looking for people that are just going to comply. It makes their job easy. They can get on to whatever they're going to do next really quickly. And if you give them a ration of shit, they may not like, and I'm talking about legal shit, you know, don't threaten or just say,
drop your pants and go poo-poo.
Am I being detained or am I free to go now? Or if you feel like staying, perhaps, just, why are you hanging around me? Are you stalking me? And engage them on why they're right in front of you. Too many people basically use it as an excuse to, like, they'll try to conversationalize them. Or, actually, I've seen this with the downtown hosts and the security guards. They think if they suck up to them, that it actually benefits them at all, and they are deluded.
Speaking of our friends, the police over there.
They're everywhere. But if you'll notice, the semantics all the way around, just like the thing about the homeless, look what they just did to Edward Snowden. They claim he's in flight and he hasn't been captured. Interpol does not have him on their list. He's not wanted for anything. They play fast and loose. It happens from above to below. They talk about homeless people in blocks and groups of people as this one monolithic thing where everybody's an automaton like QB workers. But in reality, there's a whole bunch of different people out here. And I think a smart cop essentially figures out after a while, unless they're too stupid to live, that they're dealing with individuals. And admittedly, there's a bunch of really dense ones out there, too, and I don't want to go into it. And, big shout-out to Officer Winston, who gave me a ticket one night and informed me that he knew my handle on IndieBay. Talk about terrorism. I told him I didn't care. Anybody that talks to me for 5 minutes on the street hears the same thing that I write about in my blog. I'm not scared of them. Why should I be?
Now, tonight the ACLU is meeting at the fourth Monday of every month. They meet at 7 o'clock at the Loudoun-Nelson Center. And about a year ago, you brought some concerns to the ACLU.
I just talked with Bob Tarrant about it sometime in July.
What were those concerns?
It's a certain strong-arm tactic that was used on me one night for a camping ticket in regard to giving up a form of identification that I'm legally required not to give them as a form of identification. I informed the officer, and I don't want to get into too much detail, but I informed the officer at the time that if he was lying to me and he was making me commit a federal crime because he said it was due that.
What was Mr. Tarrant's approach? I understand he and you were having some sort of subcommittee to consider this.
Well, it seems that the ACLU, due to the fact that the local ACLU, really, folks, and I remember what they did to the Japanese, and the California CLU doesn't exist anymore, and the ACLU is basically a fan club here. They don't have any resources. They don't want to push the San Francisco people, you know, the people at the regional office to give them resources or anything. But so what ends up happening is the big push here is a really limited amount of time that you're given to recover your property. And the police knowing that really you can't wait 3 days or a week for your sleeping bag. You need your sleeping bag tonight. Book and release. Not your stuff, right?
Will you be coming to demand this be changed at the ACLU meeting tonight?
No. This is going to happen between me and their homeless liaison, and I
Should
still
they have a homeless liaison.
Yeah, they do. Bob Tarrant and
the ACLU.
And yeah, the ACLU. Oh, yeah. Not well. No, they probably have someone they call. That titles are so much better than raises. Anyway, I need to get back inside.
We've been talking with
Razor Ray.
Thank you, Razor Ray.
And that looks like it covers the interviews Monday at the Red Church. You are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM for the next few days, and then try us on the internet at freakradio.org, where we will probably, well, we're likely to continue to be there. And if we could find another place to transmit from, we'll go back on the air again. And maybe that's already happened, but Uncle Dennis will give us an update on that when he comes into the studio, hopefully. This is Bathrob Spears, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. This is a twice-weekly show from 6 to 8 on Thursdays and from 9:30 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon when I'll be back again this coming Sunday. And let's get musical and listen to another one from Working.
When I retired, the first 2 years I was downhearted. But then I give myself a good going over. Joe, I said, you can't sit at home like that, waste your time. You got to get out and do things. Well, the day goes pretty fast for me now. Keep busy, keep moving. That's the trick. You wake at 10, fold up the bed. You don't want to leave your couch open all day, you know? It's depressing. You cook an egg. You toast some bread. You cook for yourself, you save a bundle. You don't keep track of your money, who will? You think about the day ahead. You don't go feeling sorry for yourself. It's like I said, you can sit at home and be mad at the world, or you can get out and do things. You take a walk. You meet a chum. This one guy lives down by National Biscuit. Boy, you should see the nice aroma. You shoot the bull. You argue some. And maybe he calls up a couple of other fellas to come over and play some poker. You lose at gin. Until they come, this guy remembers what cards you picked up. The dirty bum, but even getting beat at gin sure beats doing nothing. You take a bus, you take a train, you go visit your wife's grave. On the way, you read the Reader's Digest. It does you good to use your brain. Or maybe you go out and see your cousin, you bring a six-pack. You take a stroll down memory lane. When we was young, we was always together. And raised in Cane, we go back a long ways, him and me, all the times we had. I remember once, back in 22, we was at this fair with these girls we knew. On this crazy ride, where you scream or you pray, the Big Dipper, they called it. We could hardly walk as we left the car, so we staggered down for a candy bar. Then we sat and laughed in the penny arcade. Oh. at 6 o'clock. You watch the news. Them politicians get you so mad you throw your slippers at the set. You cook some franks, no big to-dos. Most nights you lay around and straighten up. Maybe you call your daughter. You watch a game, you take a snooze. But then there's Sunday. Sunday's different. You change your shirt and shine your shoes, 'cause you're going round the block to the tavern. You shoot some pool, you drink some beer. You don't have to drink a lot to have a good time. You have maybe 3-4 in an evening. You find a pal, you bend his ear. You meet a lot of your old crowd there Sunday. Sometimes a bunch of you sing the kind of song you never hear, like your Pretty Baby and Tifa Too. And then you cheer. Last Sunday night we sang Till We Meet Again. Believe it or not, I once did a waltz of that tune. Honest to God, it was at a dance. I was 17, and the girl was like from a magazine, and the lights were low, and I really mean low. I think a couple of my friends had something to do with that. And I kissed her cheek as we waltzed away. I remember that like it's yesterday. Boy, was she surprised. I can hear her say, Joe. They drive you home from round the block. You take your cash out of your sock. You fix the bed, you check the lock. You wind the clock. When I retired, a lot of people told me, Joe, you got your health, you shouldn't have done it. But I got no regrets. I keep busy, keep traveling. I go to fires every once in a while. That big fire we had on Milwaukee Avenue about 3 months ago, I was there. I was surprised. The smoke was coming out of there heavy as hell, but you don't see no flame, you know? Boy, that was some fire.
And that was... It was called Joe, I believe, from Workin'. You know, there's a lot of media hubbub about Edward Snowden, the heroic whistleblower who's disappeared into the Moscow airport. But the real issue is not really about him, but the focus should be on the information he's exposing and new information that's coming out. So, for instance, story in The Guardian tonight, NSA collected U.S. email records in bulk for more than 2 years under Obama by Glenn Greenwald and Spencer Ackerman. And here's a little of the story. The Obama administration for more than 2 years permitted the National Security Agency to continue collecting vast amounts of records detailing the email and internet usage of Americans, according to secret documents obtained by The Guardian. The documents indicate that under the program launched in 2001, a federal judge sitting on the secret surveillance panel called the FISA court would approve a bulk collection order for internet metadata every 90 days. A senior administration official confirmed the program, stating that it ended in 2011. The collection of these records began under the Bush administration's wide-ranging warrantless surveillance program, collectively known by the NSA codename Stellar Wind. According to a top-secret draft report by the NSA's Inspector General, published for the first time today by The Guardian, the agency began collection of the bulk internet metadata involving communications with at least one communicant outside the United States, or for which no communicant was known to be a citizen of the United States. So it could be someone inside the U.S. who's not a citizen. Eventually, the NSA gained authority to analyze communications metadata associated with United States persons and persons believed to be in the United States, according to a 2007 Justice Department memo, which is marked secret. So it's not just people outside the United States. It's not just people who aren't citizens. It's everybody, if I understand this story correctly, which means, of course, that Obama was either lying or misinformed several days ago when he said that was not the case. if this story is accurate. The Guardian revealed that this month that the NSA was collecting the call records of millions of U.S. Verizon customers under a FISA court order that it later emerged is renewed every 90 days. Similar orders are in place for other phone carriers. The Internet metadata of the sort the NSA collected for at least a decade details the accounts to which Americans send emails and from which they receive emails. It also details the Internet protocol addresses, the IPs, used by people inside the United States when sending emails, information which can reflect their physical location. It did not include the content of the emails. The Internet metadata collection program authorized by the FISA court was discontinued in 2011 for operational and resource reasons and has not been restarted. Sean Turner, the Obama administration's director of communications for national intelligence, said in a statement to The Guardian, if you can believe him. The program was discontinued by the executive branch as a result of an interagency review, Turner continued. He would not elaborate further. But while that specific program has ended, additional secret NSA documents seen by The Guardian show that some collection of America's online records continues today. In December 2012, for example, the NSA launched one new program, allowing it to analyze communications with one end inside the U.S., leading to a doubling of the amount of data passing through its filters. What your email metadata reveals. The Obama administration argues that its Internet checks on NSA surveillance program, as well as review by the FISA court, protect Americans' privacy. Deputy Attorney General James Cole defended the bulk collection of Americans' phone records as outside the scope of the Fourth Amendment's protections against unreasonable searches and seizures. Toll records, phone records like this that don't include any content are not covered by the Fourth Amendment because people don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy in who they called and when they called. Cole testified to the House Intelligence Committee on June 18th. That's something you show to the phone company. That's something you show to many, many people within the phone company on a regular basis. But email metadata is different. Customers' data bills do not itemize online activity by detailing the addresses a customer emailed or the IP addresses from which the customer devices accessed the Internet. Internal government documents describe how revealing these email records are, how revealing they are. One 2008 document signed by the U.S. Defense Secretary and Attorney General states that the collection and subsequent analysis included the information appearing on the to, from, or BCC lines of a standard email or other electronic communication from Americans. In reality, it is hard to distinguish email metadata from email content, distinctions that might make sense for telephone conversations and data about those conversations do not always hold for online communications. The calls you make can reveal a lot, but now that so much of our lives are mediated by the Internet, your IP Internet protocol logs are really a real-time map of your brain. What you are reading about, what you are curious about, what personal ad you are responding to with a dedicated email link to that specific ad, what online discussions are you participating in, and how often, said Julian Sanchez of the Cato Institute. Seeing your IP logs, and especially feeding them through sophisticated analytic tools, is a way of getting inside your head that in many ways is on a par with reading your diary, Sanchez added. The purpose of this Internet metadata collection program is detailed in the full classified March 2009 draft report prepared by the NSA's Inspector General. One function of this Internet record collection is what is commonly referred to as data mining, and which the NSA calls contact chaining. The agency analyzed networks with 2 degrees of separation, 2 hops from the target, the report says. In other words, the NSA studied the online records of people who communicated with people who communicated with targeted individuals. Contact chaining was considered off-limits inside the NSA before 9/11. In the 1990s, according to the draft IG report, the idea was nixed when the Justice Department told NSA that the proposal fell within one of the FISA definitions of electronic surveillance and was therefore not permissible when applied to metadata associated with presumed U.S. persons. How the U.S. government came to collect Americans' email records. Well, this story goes on. It's a lengthy story in The Guardian. It's very lengthy. But this kind of information, which is forcing the Obama regime's minions to respond to these questions because their documents are being revealed for the American people to see, is really what's important, not whether Snowden goes here, whether he goes there. And, of course, the only papers that are really covering this fully so far that I can see, I mean, there's, you do get the headlines. The Guardian is a good place to go, or Glenn Greenwald's site, as long as he continues to survive. So I encourage you to check them out. It's almost it for this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm going to play another little bit of music, and then I'm going to assume that Uncle Dennis will be tromping in his usual fashion, and you'll be able to perhaps get some updates from him on what the status of the station is. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'll be back on Sunday, 9:30. And I'll also be available on the Spilly Chili Marathon at 2 o'clock on Community TV, whatever that's worth. If you want to reach me off air, you can contact me on the at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Thanks.
They put down the plate, there's a sound, not with grace. When they move a chair, it'll scrape with a grate on the ground.
Not with me.
I will have my hand right when I place the glass. Notice how I stand right as customers pass. Serve a demi-tasse with a gesture so gentle, or do it again till it's near oriental. Fine waitress to see that you pleasure each guest. There's a twist to my wrist if I let a fork drop or cut up a pork chop or serve a New York chop. It all needs to be stylish and smart. That's what makes it an art. I remember one day, as I do now and then, I had shakes
and down I went.
There with my tray full of 7 prime tenderloin steaks, down I went. But I kept my poise, not one guest heard me fall. Never made a noise, not one noise, food and all. If you have to crawl, you give them what they like. You carry your tray like it's almost ballet-like. La, 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 la. It's an art, it's an art. You'll be a fine waitress each evening. I treasure the test. Well, my chef may be deaf, I stay diplomatic. If I give him static, he might burn the haddock or put too much salt in a tart. Even that is an art. Tips are important for people like captains and barmen. For them, it's a tipsy for me. I'm a gypsy, just toss me a coin, and I suddenly feel like I'm Carmen. So on through the O's to the back eight, the hot sweaty feet. On you go. Through is your night doll, sir, and madam wants what with her meat? Approaches, the curtains descend. There among the roaches, my act's at an end. Every night I tend to find myself crying. There's no work so trying or so satisfying. I tell everybody that I'm a waitress and I'm proud.
Somebody comes up to me and says, hey, you're terrific. How come you're just a waitress? You know what I say to them? I say, why? Don't you think you deserve to be served by me? It's an art.
This,
it's an art to be a waitress, to do without leisure or rest. So I zoom through the room with a flare no one else has, an air no one else has, I swear. No one else has my lilt when I say, all apart. You can see it gives me a glow.
I'm not quite Michelangelo. But I'm not just a waitress. I'm a woman.
Number nine, big buddy, put your ears on for me now. Big trucker got to have a big lie. So come on, brother trucker, you got to come back, mother. Keep seeing double, let's not close.